You are Locked On Syracuse, your daily podcast on the Syracuse Orange, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, a new week and a new month of the Locked On Syracuse podcast. We are into August and we are cruising as Syracuse fans. Boeheim's Army with a big time win that we're going to dive into today on the show. And also, Ty, I'm sure you saw this late last night on Sunday, but shout out to Miles Robinson for
you
Team USA.
That could
was unbelievable.
This might be a soccer country now, based off of all the tweets that I saw last night on my timeline. I mean, Miles Robinson, a hero, a former Syracuse soccer player, scores the winning goal for Team USA in the CONCACAFs. And I have never seen U.S. soccer Twitter rally like it did last night. I don't think I've ever seen it before.
Yeah.
People thought this was a big deal. And it wasn't just Syracuse people. It was my entire timeline. Everyone was all over Miles Robinson last night. So shout out to him.
Yeah, it's like, for me, I'm a big golf fan, and all of a sudden when I'm watching the Masters Sunday every year, I'm like, wait, people actually like golf? Why is my Twitter talking about this so much?
Yeah.
And that's what it was for soccer last night.
Yeah, but you see it every once in a while. UFC fights occasionally, that pops up too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've never seen people that I thought had zero interest in soccer rally around Miles Robinson like they'd known him for 10 years.
Yeah, unbelievable goal, the header there in extra time to beat Mexico, so that was awesome, but it was also awesome to see Boeheim's Army get that win. And today on the show, we're going to recap that. We'll dive into running backs this week on our most important rankings. For those of you that haven't been up to date on those, we rank number 5 all the way down to number 1, as we're here with you every single weekday for each position group. We're doing one a week. Running backs is the group this week, so we'll get to number 5 in a little bit. But man, as exciting as Miles Robinson's goal was, Tyrese Rice and that Elam Ender was maybe, that was like the best sports moment I've seen in 2 months, I'd say. I mean,
yeah.
I'm ready to just go
it's
nuts
right up
about
there.
That.
I mean, Tyrese Rice, rename the team, Rice's Army, because you look at what he did out there. He scored every single point in the Elam Ending, for starters, and every time he shot the ball, you felt like it was going in, whether it was a pull-up in transition three, whether it was a floater, and then he gets that beautiful strip and score at the end. I mean, and then he fumbles it right at the goal line, it felt like. I don't know where your heart was, but when it was, what was it, 64-64, heading into the final sequence, and I thought, you know, I don't think they're going to win this one. I did not feel good about it. And then I see the little poke, Tyrese gets out in transition, and then I'm like, oh my God, they're going to win. And then he starts to fumble it a little bit. I was like, oh no. And then he somehow maneuvers and still gets it to go. I couldn't believe it. It was one heck of a finish. They really, I mean, each of the last two games, they were come from behind efforts in that Elam Ending. And you're starting to see they can win in any sort of fashion now.
I have never had so much faith in a player. I mean, I was totally like, just get him the ball and get out of the way. And that's why I think I never really felt like they were going to lose. Maybe after he did miss the shot right before the strip score and they're coming down the other end, I'm like, gosh, we got to stop him again. Because there's nothing more stressful than watching your team in an Elam Ending setting and they need to get a stop, right? And they had already done it once and now they got to do it again. And that big guy was killing us, who I think he had 18 and 16. They kind of took him out for a couple of the offensive plays late, I guess, to go like offense, defense, but then they couldn't bring him back in for offense. But that was epic, dude. I just love the Elam Ending. I really think that if basketball was started tomorrow and it was never a thing and we had the option, that would be the best course forward for ending a basketball game, because it eliminates the free throw slog at the end, and it's just fun. And you know, it's nice that I had a 2:20 tee time yesterday, and I was like, there's no way I'm missing this. The game's gonna end at 1:45 at worst. Like, there's something about that that's great.
You know what it reminds me of a lot? It reminds me of playoff baseball atmosphere. Obviously, there's the parallel of no clock, but it's like you have to go out there and get a stop. Doesn't matter how long it takes you to do it, you got to go strike this guy out, you got to go stop him on one end of the floor. That's what it reminds me of. And it's got that same sort of pressure and feel to it. Now, obviously, it's not nearly as pressure-packed as it is for a regular Syracuse basketball game or your favorite team's basketball game or a football game or anything like that. But It's got that feel to it of like, it's you versus the opponent. Those are the only things you're battling. You're not battling the clock. It's you and the other five on the floor. And to me, that's really exciting. Now, will it ever be in the NBA? No. I can never.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
I can never see it. And I'll also say this. As much as I love the Elam ending, I don't know if I'd want it in the NBA either.
Yeah, it's. I mean, how could you incorporate it now with record books and history? And I know that's more of a baseball conversation.
Now, what I would say is, if you wanted to incorporate it into overtime, I wouldn't be opposed to that.
Yeah,
if you wanted to shuffle up overtime a little bit. But regular season and regulation basketball, I would be all right with. I wouldn't tamper with that at all. But when you talk about overtime during the regular season, I wouldn't do it in the postseason, but in the regular season overtime, I'd be okay with it, I think.
It just brings these great moments. I mean, that play was about as loud as I've cheered at something in a long time. It's one of those plays where,
and
like,
some
I
of the
dogs
threes,
my...
too. I mean, the threes, yeah, it feels like they mean so much.
Yeah, and so I'm watching the game with my dad, which was just amazing because I'm sure I've
told
the
headband
story before.
Were you wearing the headband?
I wasn't. I got to say, I can't find the headband. For those that don't know,
okay. You can't look for it now. You know that, right? Because if you look for it now and you find it, you're going to mess with the mojo.
My dad and I have just blamed it on my mom because it was in like my childhood room and my mom just probably saw it and was like, oh, this is some meaningless headband because it's so nondescript. But Tyrese Rice, I'm sure we told this story before. I think we have, right? He gave me the headband after the NC State game. So loyal listeners know.
We got to get you hooked up. If they win it all, Tyrese has to get you a headband somehow.
Get me another one?
He's got to get
I'd wear
you
it all
yeah.
the time.
He probably has a bunch of them sitting around, but he's got to get you one.
He probably gave it to like 15 kids, but he gave it to 10-year-old me when I was a young BC fan because my dad went to BC, and now it comes full circle. We're watching 34-year-old Tyrese Rice, and we have this like shared interest now.
That's
where my
so
dad,
wild.
It's wild, dude. He's a lifelong BC fan. We had to watch this game together, and we're watching the Elam ending, and we're all just like invested in Tyrese Rice, and it's so cool because after he gave me that headband when I was like 10, the next 2 or 3 years, he was like my favorite player because that's what you do as a 10-year-old. And also, I was like a really small lefty point guard. And just the way he plays, I mean, it's the same way he's playing now. It's just so infectious to watch the guy like carve in and out, get to his floater, get to his spots. He's just such a fun basketball player to watch.
What's your dad's thoughts on the Elam ending? Because I'm always curious because it's the older generations that hate the new rules in baseball and all that stuff. I personally love all of baseball's new rules. I wouldn't touch them one bit right now. I think they did a fantastic job with the doubleheaders, runner on second, all that stuff. But I know that a lot of the older generation don't like it. What does your dad think of the Elam ending?
I've told him like 4 times that this is how the game ends, and he still hasn't really wrapped his head around it. He's like, wait, so they add 8 to it? Like, what happens if you get fouled? Like, there's all these things that it's tough for him to... And he's like, wait, so do you have to win by 2? There's still some question marks, but I think he's getting it. I think by the championship game, I'm optimistic that he's got it by this point. But he's all in. I mean, this is... He told me he thinks this is like the best BC basketball moment of the past decade. And I sent you a tweet of a joke, but this is it for him. This Tyrese Rice is like what he has to cling to, those Al Skinner days. And now, I mean, he gets to watch them, and he's also sort of rooting with me because there's a Syracuse tie. He's all into this.
Yeah, I mean, for the anti-ringer crowd... You felt the same rush in that moment as you would have if it was Devo. In the moment, maybe after, you would have come down to earth a little bit and said, yeah, I wish Eric Devendorf or I wish CJ Fair made that bucket. But in the moment, you cannot tell yourself that as a Syracuse fan, you did not feel a rush that would have been the equivalent of what it was when Tyrese Rice stripped and scored, that if it was Devo, you would not have felt the same way. At least that's the way I felt. My heart was at a standstill during that entire sequence. And when you see the fumble, it starts to drop a little bit. But in the moment, it felt the same as if it were a Syracuse player. Hey, did you know that Built Bar has so many delicious flavors? There is literally a flavor for everyone. And when you talk to a Built Bar fan, they are always passionate about their faves. Mine, the peanut butter brownie. You've heard me talk about it for months now. And if you don't know the Built Bar flavors, well, you are missing out. You can get anything from fruit flavors like cherry, barcia, and raspberry to some traditional chocolate ones like double chocolate or cookies and cream, German chocolate. And if you haven't tried all the flavors, you can get a mixed box as well where they'll give you two of each of the 9 flavors. And not only are Built Bars the best tasting protein bars, but they're also healthy for you too. Just check out some of the stats here. 17 to 18 grams of protein and only 130 to 180 calories with only 4 to 5 grams of sugars to go with it. So order today and get the grasshopper cookie or raspberry or whatever you like. Built Bar is the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team as well. Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 15% off your order. That's built.com, promo code LOCKEDON for 15% off your order.
I just feel so happy. Like, I was keeping an eye on Kevin Belby on the bench. And
he was,
John
he was
Belby.
Going wild. They were loving it.
It's so cool. And yeah, I think that's the coolest part. I guess Jim Boeheim's going to be in attendance now for the championship game. He's going to make his way out to Dayton, which will be really cool. It's just the Syracuse atmosphere, the Syracuse fan base. It said so much, but it's so awesome that everyone has bought into this, despite the fact that Tyrese Rice is carrying you, and it is 4 or 5 guys that are non-SU guys. It's just we're all happy for the Syracuse guys that are involved in this thing. Did you know Devo didn't even play a minute in this game, according
really?
To the box score?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I could only watch the second half.
Yeah.
So
I think same with me. And I was in and out in the first half, and I mean, at this point, C.J. Ferris looked really good. Chris McCullough's been awesome.
Well, at the end
it's
of the
not
game,
not a lot of Syracuse guys, though.
I ran the numbers. The final five that was out there to close it out, one Cuse guy on the floor, and that guy tore his ACL and played 16 games. So you had 16 games of Syracuse representation out there for Boeheim's Army. Now, I think after what you've seen so far, a couple of things stand out. Is A, the fans that were complaining about the non-Cuse guys, they're probably a little bit of Homer Simpson in the bushes for an audible meme for you right there. But I also think that you look at it and think to yourself, this team cannot win with a strictly Syracuse lineup.
Yeah.
How important has Tyrese Rice been? Let's say they didn't get Tyrese Rice. Let's say they got some average guy whether or not they played for Syracuse, or even just think about the next best possible Syracuse guy that was feasible. So let's take Carmelo out of the equation. I don't even care who it is. They're not winning this thing without Tyrese Rice. He has been the MVP of this entire tournament, and when you've got 4 or 5 out there at the end, and also I should mention this, who is it? It was DeAndre Kane. His defensive sequence on Dominique Jones at the end was fantastic as well. So it's all of these guys that have been the most important players on these teams, and they're not Syracuse guys. They have needed every last drop of what these newbies have brought.
Yeah, they're not doing a ton of scoring. Actually, the guys that I thought were really going to be impactful were DeAndre Kane and DJ Kennedy. They're still very much impactful, just not in the
Kane
scoring
Kane especially
column.
Defensively. I think
yes, that he's been really
in this
good.
Tournament, it's kind of flown under the radar, but he deserves his flowers for what he has done as a defensive player.
Yeah, he just can't really shoot a 3 right now. Him and Malachi have been very cold at times, and they're getting open looks, and the team as a whole shoots 6 for 29 from 3. In this latest game, they shot terrible from the free throw line on Saturday and somehow escaped with the win. So here's the good news. They played probably the 2 best teams on paper besides them in the tournament now, and the Golden Eagles team that was the defending champs, and then this recent win. And they've won those games despite not shooting the basketball very well. And it felt like the first couple games they were shooting it really well, and I was looking around thinking, how are they shooting the 3 ball this well? Now it's kind of come back down to earth, but this team that they're about to play in the championship game, on paper, they're better than them, and they're kind of due to shoot the basketball a little bit better, both from the free throw line and from 3-point range.
So it's team 23, and it got me thinking a little bit here. If it's Jordan affiliated that has its ties to UNC, is this a bad matchup? Is this a, like, we know, the struggles against UNC are well documented. Is this a bad matchup for Boeheim's Army as a result of it?
I mean, I guess if you're grasping at straws there, I hope Roy Williams isn't on the other side. I hope he doesn't come. How many UNC guys are on the team? Do you know?
I haven't even looked at the roster. I'll be honest with you.
It might not even be UNC affiliate.
I'm just coming up with conspiracies here. All right. I'm trying to connect dots. I'm trying to get out ahead of the narrative here.
Right. I think what we'll do, we just haven't even looked at it yet, but we'll probably break down this opponent on the next podcast.
Yes.
So the Tuesday podcast before the game. That's Tuesday, 9 p.m. For anyone that doesn't know, it's on ESPN. I'm just excited, though. I think a couple of little things here just to bring up. One article came out this morning, so Monday morning on Syracuse.com. I think Mike Waters wrote it, that Tyler Lydon has really been playing through injury a lot of this tournament, and he's proclaimed that this is his last organized basketball game, or his last game of his playing career. He is set to retire after this. Only 25, but I guess he needs two more surgeries after he's had the torn meniscus issues that date back to his time in the NBA. He needs surgery on his hip and his knee, and he's just been taking like cortisone shots and gunning it out and playing through this, which he was playing a little bit shaky, and now I feel bad about saying that stuff because it makes a lot more sense. And I think it's also awesome that he is still grinding through this, and it goes to show you that he wanted to be out there competing with those guys and just basically quote-unquote wear that Syracuse jersey one more time.
And it's fitting, like, if you're going to go out, this is kind of a good way here. Like, this is, you're about to win, in his case, with some of his former teammates, too, when you look at guys like Malachi and Andrew White. If this is going to be it, this is a nice little send-off for you right here. The best team that Boeheim's Army has ever put together. And also, you're playing with some of your former friends, too. Or I shouldn't say former friends, your friends, but former teammates. And it's a nice little send-off for him, I'd say.
Yeah, and also his teammate, both now and when he was at Syracuse, Malachi Richardson, signed a deal in Italy. That came out last week. We hadn't got a chance to talk about that. He has been very up and down in this tournament, but he was huge again on Saturday. I put out the joke on Twitter about him in Elite Eight games because he had that big second half rally again. He was big in the Elam ending. At this point, though, it's pretty clear Tyrese Rice is the best guy on this team, at least right now in terms of scoring. And then the rest of the guys, the best lineup has been those closing lineup where you got four of the five non-Syracuse guys. Kiefer Sykes had one good game. He's kind of struggled since. And really, CJ Fair has been the best option off the bench recently.
I reached out to our slime correspondent, okay? You know who our slime correspondent is, Tim?
No idea.
Noah Eagle. All right. The man who has been slimed on TV, or has been attempted to be slimed on TV once upon a time. Syracuse alum.
Yeah, that didn't even happen, right?
I don't even know, but he's definitely dabbled around the slime. He knows slime better than anyone else that we know. All right. So I asked him, one of our good friends, Noah Eagle, where how do you feel? How slimy is this? Where does this rank on the slime meter? And he said it is not quite at a Kevin Durant to the Warriors, but he doesn't care. And guess what? I feel like this, okay? All of the Big East crowd hates this. Hates that they're teaming up. But the ACC crowd's like, you know what? Let's just win. Let's just win. And you and I are cut from the ACC cloth. Noah, our buddy, is cut from the ACC cloth, although he does have plenty of Big East in him because his father's allegiance is to Syracuse and the old Big East and all that stuff. The great Iron Eagle. So I don't know. I mean, the 16 games at the end of Syracuse experience out there on the floor, I personally no longer care. I never did care.
Yeah.
I never did care. And you shouldn't either, because when you saw Tyrese Rice go for that bucket, you probably felt the same way that Tim and I did. We didn't care who it was. You just saw the Boeheim's Army on the chest. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters.
I said this in a recent podcast. I stand by this. If this was the first time ever that a Syracuse alumni team was playing in anything and they joined in the TBT and it was predominantly non-SU players closing the game, I don't think I'd be totally invested in it. I think it would be different then. But the reason why I care so much is because we've been watching this team in this very tournament now for, what, 7-8 years?
Right.
And they've only made it to the champion.
Yeah, the foundation is orange, right?
Yeah, and
Devo,
that's why
Kevin Belby,
I feel like
Ryan Blackwell.
Yeah, I'm rooting for those guys because they deserve to actually win it. And if you don't, I mean, like, they can lose on Tuesday night, tomorrow night, and they don't make anything for
yeah,
this.
If they
it's a
lose,
lot of work they put in.
If they lose tomorrow night, you might as well have lost in the first round. It's the prize, yeah. The outcome is the same.
Which is kind of wild. It's yeah, a lot it of pressure on them. Yeah. But
what
anyway,
do you think of
we'll
this? If you get the million, if you get to that championship game, you get to, like, wager it out, and you get to split the million between the two teams, however the two teams decide upon it. That's what I do personally for fantasy football. Is
yeah.
There's a pot of money at the end, and then the two winners, you get to decide how you split it. But then you get people who, like the macho tough crowd. Like, I don't know if you saw the high jump gold medal for the men's side over the weekend, where the two guys kept going back and forth, and they're really good friends, too. And they tied, or they didn't tie, but they could have either kept going into a jump off, or they could have each gotten gold, and they decided to split the gold medal. So they each got gold, and
really?
Then the next guy got, and like the third guy got bronze, but they decided to split the gold medal. And like, you could do a 50-50 pot split, but then, you know, like, macho guys everywhere are going to be all up in arms about, oh, there's no love of competition anymore and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Tyrese Rice, I might be walking up to the team if they win on Tuesday night and saying, all right, you guys owe me at least 20 more K. Like, I need more of this split.
Yeah.
80K way, for me? I can't
I
be making to, the same amount as Andrew White.
Yeah. I do need to call you out for something, Tim. I do need to call you out for something here.
Okay.
So you tweeted out the best closers in sports history.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Brady in the Super Bowl, MJ in the finals, Tiger in a major on Sunday. And then Tyrese Rice is your number one in Elam ending. And all of those are fine lists. But there is a notable omission.
Yep.
And you shall be called out accordingly. And it was brought to our attention during in the comments section of the tweets here. And our good friend Lee, who notoriously ate a shoe for us.
I'm sorry,
Mariano
Lee.
Rivera, this is your Red Sox blood showing right here. In full force, you omitting Mariano Rivera from the greatest closers in sports history is unbelievable. You putting Tom Brady on that list and not Mariano Rivera, shame on you. Your Red Sox fandom is showing a little too much.
Yeah, it's basically tell me you're a Boston sports fan without telling me you're a Boston
well done.
Sports fan, mm-hmm. is what I just did. Yeah, no,
by
I should have put him up there. It slipped my mind. I was focused on... I don't know. I just blanked, and I regret that error. He probably should be even higher than Brady, and I'll acknowledge that. Brady is like the best. I don't know. It's more just Brady bringing the team to the Super Bowl that's more amazing than what he does at the end of games. It's still very impressive, but Mariano Rivera is about as good as it gets in terms of ending the game the right way.
Couple other tweets I want to bring up that came to my attention over the course. First of all, one of our buddies, Michael Lear, he's been calling the games for ESPN Radio in Syracuse. He tweeted out a picture of CJ Fair filling out the tax forms for the prize that Boeheim's Army would get. So I ask you, is that counting your chickens before they hatch? Or is that, you know how in the NCAA tournament they say, we packed for six games? Is that we packed for six right. games?
Yeah. I think they probably all do that, I'm guessing. Like, even Team 23 is doing that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm not going to put any voodoo on
that.
But
he's filling it out
but
at the gym, not at the hotel. He's filling them out at the gym.
I would say if he is doing that and the other team isn't doing it, I don't like it. But I'm assuming that it's something that every team has
is
to
it
do,
an omen
so.
Is what I'm trying to get at. Is it an omen, like... Is that confidence or overstepping? I'm going to take the approach that is we packed for six games.
I'll also say this. I'm way too confident about tomorrow night. Yes. Like, I'm ready for pain. I mean,
I've seen
how could we not be after
the way
this
Tyrese
team has
Rice
battled.
Like, what if Tyrese Rice goes out and has a dud tomorrow? Goes, like, 2 for 12. Then it's over.
There's some Jalen Suggs potential after he hits
Corey
the
Kispert,
unbelievable
yeah.
shot in uh-huh. the Final Four. Let down. I mean, I'm just, it's happened in sports before, but I am so confident in this team right now. And I just think they're better than the team that I haven't even looked up the roster of. But based on what I've seen on Twitter and everything, and I watch bits and pieces of that Team 23 game, because I was rooting for the Buffalo team. I thought that would have been a cool story. But yeah, I think they're better than them, and they've already beat the two best teams, I think.
One of the last little tweets I want to get to here, this is a tweet that was sent to Brent Axe and Mike Waters. I don't know if you saw this from at QSNation10. Being 90% serious with this question, if Boeheim's Army wins, does Q's put a banner up at Manly or the Dome, even as a wall piece? Doesn't have to be the main attraction, but it would be cool if there was something that fans could see. I would have said the old Syracuse team, if it was the purebred Syracuse teams, or like there's one or two guys that are on the team. I'm not saying there would have been a banner in the Dome, but you know how they have the little exhibits around the concourse at the Dome? I think you could put a little exhibit up or like a team picture or something, but when you've got 16 games of Syracuse experience in that final lineup, but I know, listen, I'm all for winning, okay? But I don't think you go that far as maybe put like a team picture up and maybe the Nets.
Yeah, don't put a banner up. But I mean, that's ridiculous.
No banners. No.
Yeah.
No.
Right. Get Tiana's jersey up there before you do something
There's higher orders of business that need to be taken care
right.
of.
Right. For sure. But I'm all for an exhibit or something. I think it means a lot to the fan base, and it's cool that they made it this far. So we will preview the game, the title game, tomorrow. That'll drop Tuesday morning for you guys, and then we'll get you ready for the 9 p.m. game tomorrow. Quick break to remind you guys about betonline.ag, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action right now. Baseball season in full swing, post a crazy MLB trade deadline, a lot of games to bet on each and every day over at BetOnline. You got UFC on the weekends, you got golf on the weekends. There's still tons of sports out there. Olympics going on. If you think it's a downtime, there's no better way to get more invested in these games than betting on them. And before the next pitch or the next game, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information they have to offer. And when you sign up for a free account over at BetOnline.ag, use our promo code that's LOCKEDON, all one word, LOCKEDON. It gets you a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Go over to betonline.ag, put that in a web browser or on a mobile device. Just put in the browser, it'll pop up. Sign up for a totally free account. Use our promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit at BetOnline. Real quick, before we get out of here, gotta talk a little bit about Josh Huff, who is our number 5 most important running back now. And also, just want to make a note before we dive into our Josh Huff discussion and the running back rankings, we'll be counted down this week. A guy that probably would have been on here, definitely would have been on here, but obviously has been in the transfer portal for a while, made a decision to go to Louisville, or at least reports are indicating. I believe Stephen Bailey said that Juwar Jordan is on his way to Louisville, which it took a while for him to land somewhere, but we always really, I think you and I both really thought he was a very talented guy, very hyped up guy. Kind of bummed that it was Louisville from a personal standpoint, because I don't really want to see him run all over us in an ACC divisional game, but pumped for him because I do think he's a very good player, and he just kind of ran into some bad injury luck last year, and now we got a crowded backfield that it makes sense that he moved on a little bit.
No doubt, and Juwar Jordan, I don't know where he would have been on your list of 5, but he would have made mine. Would have been like 4, I would say. Was that sound about right for you? I would probably put him at like 4.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's had a weird career, right? Because he hasn't really done anything production-wise, but he's long been tabbed as this very hyped-up guy. And when he has gotten out on the field, kind of similar to maybe Luke Benson, he's shown a lot of flashes, and he provides this speed that is so intriguing and so appealing. So, I don't know, he's going to a crowded backfield at Louisville as well. They kind of always have a lot of running backs that they use, so that's a plus for him. I don't really know what's next for him or how effective he's going to be at Louisville. I think a lot of it comes down to how much he responds from the injury. But yeah, he would have been top 4 for me, I think.
Yeah, I probably would have slotted him at 4 because, yeah, he's one of those guys that you and I thought had some potential in him, and we just never really saw it play out, and not necessarily his fault, but he did have a lot of hype, a lot of buzz around him.
Yeah, So getting into Josh Huff, the good news is this running back room is still loaded, and we've got a lot of fun guys to talk about. Some years, maybe we couldn't have really dipped into all five, but even last year, you look at Sean Tucker, if we would have done this list, probably would have been four or five, and he ends up carrying a bulk of the carry. So it's still important to talk about a guy like Josh Huff, who freshman running backs have been pretty successful at Syracuse, and he has all the makings to, if he gets some carries, be very successful this year. It feels like he's going to need some injury luck to go his way, or bad luck, I guess, for Syracuse to crack the running back rotation. But even talking about him as a future prospect, someone that when you watched his tape, I was totally blown away by.
And there might be situational stuff this year with Josh Huff. I know the arrival of Jarvion Howard might throw a little bit of a wrench in that, or the return, I should say, of Jarvion. And even Sean Tucker, probably a bit more powerful than your average back as well. But there may be situational stuff where you get to the goal line. Now, we have seen in the past how I think of a guy like Markenzie Pierre, where Dino tried to get him some touches at times and he would fumble the ball. Ball security is a big thing for freshman running backs. That's why someone like Sean Tucker was able to thrive. So if Josh Huff can prove that he can handle the football and not fumble it in key situations, who knows? He's a powerful guy. Maybe he does get a couple touches near the goal line in games, and especially if games are out of hand, or even if they're not out of hand. You want to give it to your best guy, and if he can be that power back, it would not shock me if he does rack up maybe three touchdowns this season, because the opportunity might be there. And who knows? He may not play in the full four games, so you can still redshirt him. So you give it to him in situations that will help his development, and goal line might be one of those things.
Yeah, I could see him sneaking into one or two touchdowns this year, whether it's garbage time, whether it's just throwing him out there for a different look at the goal line. We know they've struggled at the goal line, so I'm all for rotating things, mixing things up there. He's 6'2", he's 235 pounds, he has tons of speed for a size, but also that's very good goal line size to begin with. And you bring up Jarvion Howard, he was used in a similar role
in his freshman year.
Yeah, I mean, he had 7 touchdowns his freshman year, which is a product of that offense just being a whole lot better than any other recent Syracuse offense. That was the 2018 season.
Right.
And he regressed a little bit the next year, but he got 68 carries as a freshman. Coincidentally, Mo Neal also got 68 carries as a freshman. I don't think Josh Huff's going to get that many carries.
No.
But again, we didn't think Sean Tucker was going to be the best back we had last year, and injuries made Sean Tucker need to be the guy, and he was ready. And I think if injuries force Josh Huff to be one of the guys, I'm confident in him.
The way I see it playing out, and it's going to take a lot for Josh Huff to see significant playing time, right? I mean, he's number 5 on our list here, and 1 through 3 is pretty good when you think about the names. I mean, this is the deepest running back room we've seen at Syracuse.
I mean, yeah, 1 through 4. Yeah.
This is the deepest running back room we've seen at Syracuse in quite some time. And I think the one thing that's going to, the reason why Jarvion Howard was given so much opportunity and Josh Huff might not, is because think of the opportunity that was there. There was nobody like Jarvion Howard on the roster back in 2018. Now there's a guy like Josh Huff on the roster because his name is Jarvion Howard. And even to a degree with your 3 down back or 2 down back and Sean Tucker, your starting running back, he's got some power to him as well running the football. So there might not be a lot of opportunity for Josh Huff, but once Jarvion moves on and Josh gets into his second and third year, and this, in all likelihood, I would guess, would be a redshirt year, but I don't think he's going to be shut out from the playing field either. I think this could be a good little learning experience for Josh, and Jarvion's not a bad guy to learn under as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't say they have a quote-unquote thunder back, but they have three guys. They're three main guys that we're expecting lean more towards thunder than they do lightning. So really, if Josh Huff was Jawar Jordan, and he was like a spark plug, he could catch passes out of the backfield, he would probably have more plays called up for him or just have a better shot this year. But we're talking more. I mean, he's going to have a lot of time to get a lot of carries at Syracuse, and we're very excited about him. So anything else on Josh Huff before we kind of wrap this up?
I'm interested to see if he's redshirted and how he's redshirted.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Is it going to be one of those things where Syracuse takes advantage of that 4-game rule? Because I'm surprised it wasn't utilized. Well, last year it didn't matter. You could have played guys 11 games and you still got the red shirt. And I feel like Syracuse didn't take full advantage of that last year.
Yep. They kind of did that with Jawar Jordan. I mean, he had a huge game. Actually, I think it was against Louisville, which is kind of funny now. Maybe that influence. But 2019 had a big game against Louisville, and he just didn't really get used in all the other games. And it was kind of known that they were probably just saving him for the redshirt rule, which in hindsight, we didn't know that a pandemic was going to come and everyone was going to get an extra year anyway. And you couldn't have planned for that. But yeah, I think they will try to keep him in that redshirt window. And I like that you have that opportunity now with the college football rule the way it is. But that's going to wrap up our Monday podcast. A little bit long, but hope you guys enjoyed this. We'll be back tomorrow. We're going to catch up on some recruiting news because Kyle Flipp, unfortunately, made an announcement to go to Duke. We got to talk about that. Kadir Copeland, the good news, maybe, fingers crossed, is August 10th. He has a commitment date. Cuse is in there. We feel good about that. So we'll talk about how the 2022 class is shaping up post-Peach Jam, post those decisions. Dive into all things recruiting there, and then we will get you ready for Boeheim's Army's game, a little preview on Team 23, and wrap up the show by breaking down our number four most important running back. So that's on the docket for tomorrow. Be on the lookout wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll talk to you guys then.